Good morning and welcome to Matinair on Air. Jane Matinair, Greg Bach, and Calvin Butenhoff coming to you live from our studio in downtown Waukesha. You can always join us. You can call or text at 855-752-4842. Leave a comment on the live stream on Facebook, YouTube, or the platform that Elon continues to actively pollute. He is joining us on a special day. Normally, he would be here on Thursdays, but he's actually going to be out at the ballpark tomorrow.
Wait, it's not Thursday?
It's not Thursday. Oh, it is Wednesday.
God!
Milwaukee Journal Sentinel sports guru J.R. Radcliffe is here. Good morning, J.R. How are you doing?
Good morning. I'm doing great. Did I see that Jane's Addiction, the band who plays that song that came in with the sweeper, Jane Says, is coming to Milwaukee, I believe, in September? I think they are.
I believe so.
They're going to play that song.
Are you a Jane's Addiction fan, Jane?
Oh, not really.
Going back years. No, I have no idea.
It was. I personally love 90s rock. They're not my thing, but that's a good song. It's perfect for the show, of course.
I mean, the name of the song is, the lyrical content's a little.
Well, yeah. I mean, it was interesting when we got the show and we were looking for some intro music.
Yeah.
And I started doing some research just, you know, with song with a Jane in it. And they're all either prostitutes or junkies or, yeah, there were a lot of really screwed up Janes, apparently. That was Chris Casper's suggestion, one of our engineers.
It's a good song.
To use Jane Says.
What I think is funny, though, is that Jane, the guy who sings that song, Perry Farrell, is older than you. And you are like, I don't listen. Like, I don't listen to the rock and roll music.
Those kids. Is he really older than me?
He is.
Now I might have to go to the show. If he's as old as me, then it's got to start like at 6 o'clock.
Oh, 6 o'clock. 6 o'clock concerts.
Wouldn't that be nice?
All right. Sorry. We'll talk about it another time. Yeah. JR's got baseball to talk about, baby.
Brewer, absolutely. Yeah. Craig Council was not welcomed terribly warmly.
No. It was the loudest booze I've heard.
Really?
America if you have the field. Yeah, it was. And I mean, there have been some good ones. I'm old enough to remember Gary Sheffield getting booed quite a bit,
yeah,
both at County Stadium and Miller Park. I don't think it was quite as, though, people came to boo. People came with the expectation that they were going to get their shot to boo. It's worse than Manny Machado, who is very unpopular in Milwaukee, really ever since 2018.
Yep.
So there are people who draw this level of ire, I suppose, but they did a little pregame video on Monday on Memorial Day, sort of a thank you video. It was very brief, but just a quick, like, we acknowledge that you're very good, Craig Council, for the Brewers. And man, the vitriol was out. And then there was pregame introductions and there was more of it. So he was not welcomed. He seemed to be taking it just completely fine in stride, laughing about it, saying, you know, fans can boo, whatever. You know, he said the next day, honestly, we just kind of laughed about it. I don't know if that makes people angrier or boo louder. But yeah, he's not everybody's favorite anymore.
But do people really expect that any kind of professional athlete is not going to act in their best interests and the best interests of their family, and they're just going to stay because the fans want that?
I do think there is a differentiation between athlete and manager. I mean, first of all, I think even Pat Murphy said this, 20 years from now, people will acknowledge that Craig Council was the best manager in Brewers history, or at least to this point in their franchise history. And I think that they'll acknowledge all the good that he's done. I do think people are hurt right now. The manager, you know, he had a lot of leverage, and yes, some athletes sign free agent deals, but you know, the athlete isn't from Wisconsin. Typically the athlete isn't a guy like Craig Council who came in 2015 actually, but then full-time 2016 and was like, you know, I'm part of the Milwaukee fabric. This is my responsibility. He's echoed those sentiments over the years, saying, you know, I feel like this organization is me. He grew up with the Milwaukee Brewers. His dad was an employee for the Milwaukee Brewers. He like grew up knowing the players.
Yeah.
And he comes in and he leads them to great success. And then he goes to their rival, you know, for this, you know, market setting contract, the rival 90 miles south. And That just is never going to sit well with a lot of people. A lot of people are really struggling with that. It's different from an athlete who is not from here, who does not cultivate, you know,
doesn't have the ties,
but cultivate his brand as Wisconsin and then go elsewhere.
Well, and there was also just, I mean, the comment he made, I think even at spring training, or maybe it was right when the season started, about going to the stadium and seeing it full of fans and making a crack at the fans at Wrigley versus us, the fact that, you know, Wrigley games are generally more populated than our games, but they still have a lot of fans there. And making a crack like, well, it's good to know that they're with the fans are out or that they like you or something like that. It's like, well,
yeah,
you didn't need to say that.
But isn't Wrigley considerably smaller than AmFam Field?
No.
Oh, it's not
in terms of seating capacity. Okay. It's a considerably less, it's a worse venue because it sucks. But
well, and it's old, right?
It is old. It's old. Actually. And I don't even agree. I'm kidding because they've gone through a renovation. Actually, if people haven't been to Wrigley in a few years,
it's quite
a bit nicer than it used to be. It still sucks, of course. I do think people were reading a lot into what Craig Counsell was saying and interpreting a lot of things as jabs at the former, at the old fan base. I personally, just having encountered him enough, don't think that's what he was doing. I think he legitimately is a person who's been around baseball for his whole life. Has played, we forget he like won World Series in Florida and Arizona, like he has been all over the map. Baseball, he went to college in Indiana. He is from here. He lives here, but he's a baseball guy, and the baseball lifestyle is by nature, I don't know if transient's the right word, but like you move around
you move
a lot.
Around. Yeah.
No,
don't develop those ties, because you could be that guy's opponent next year at this time, And I don't think he saw any team as different from, the Cubs, the Reds, the Cardinals, they're all the same. Pirates, they're all the same. They are a game to be played tonight. They are a challenge in the division. They are not a rival in his eyes the way that they are in the fans' eyes.
And I get what you're saying. I think but there is something to be, to mention with regard to there's a baseball park named after him. He didn't commute here from Chicago or from a big city or from some other place. It's the fact that he put down roots so hard and made it seem that he is so much of the community. Even that I was fine with, but it's still the fact that he just went to the Cubs. He could have went to so many other teams and maybe not because they aren't looking for coaches. And I was like, oh, if he goes to the Mets, cool. Go to the Mets. Make the Mets win. But the fact that he went to the Cubs just felt, I don't know. And that's me being sensitive. I know that. It's a business deal. He made money. He's setting the bar for coaches in the future. Great. But still, bro, go to the White Sox then.
So it's a betrayal. It's a feeling of being betrayed.
That's how people feel, for sure. And I do think it's also important to note that I do believe Craig Counsell is one of the best at his craft. I do think he was as good a manager in the big leagues as you could get. He was one of the longest tenured guys. He was the longest tenured guy in the National League, and he had a lot of success. I still believe the manager doesn't matter that much in big league baseball. It is not the difference between, winning 82 and 92 games. The manager does not make that difference. Every study that's looked at this will kind of come to the same conclusion, even though it's very intangible. It's hard to gauge managers and how they bring a clubhouse together and if that even matters in a sport like baseball. And there are only so many moves a manager can make. I think that the Brewers don't stand to lose a lot on the field, but they do stand to lose a little. But it's purely an emotional thing, I think, for fans right now. They lost the guy that they thought was like a Milwaukee lifer. And think of how sensitive Milwaukee fans are about Chicago in all contexts, in all, like, they're the big city, just the idea that anytime the national media talks about a local team and is like, oh, is Giannis going to go to New York or Philadelphia? And it's like, friends, he says he loves it here and he is constantly resigning here. Giannis is staying in Milwaukee. It's very sensitive when you've got your guys that they are not going to defect to the big city, and not just the big city, but Chicago, the city everyone here sort of doesn't love. It's a perfect storm, I think. And well, people will figure it out down the line. It'll be okay. Like it is with Brett Favre, or was with Brett Favre temporarily, but it's tough right now.
I mean, him being here was one thing, but I'm pretty much over it because for one thing, I really enjoy Pat Murphy. I like his style of coaching, which is just very, he's about like the whole, like, I don't know. There's something, I don't want to say he's not focused. When Craig Counsell talks, I always felt like there was 10,000 things going on in his brain. When Pat Murphy talks, he's just talking about baseball. He's talking about the whole big picture, at least as I'm hearing it. And the fact that before spring training even started, all the analytics had us dead last, just playing poorly. And this team is really doing far better than expected. Where we'll be in 2 months, 3 months post All-Star break, I don't know. But at least for right now, it seems like they're having a really good time and they're getting themselves a nice, solid family team like they had back in 2018, 2019. And it feels really good.
Yeah, I think from a media perspective, it's night and day. Craig Counsell didn't suffer foolishness. And I like Craig Counsell, but he definitely, you got the sense that when you were interacting with him from a media standpoint, it was all kind of just a waste of time with, you know, and he, I don't think he was like just cliche guy. I just think he made it very clear that he was bored with all of his part of it.
Yeah.
Pat Murphy is having a good time in the media sessions. You know, he's making comments that are off the cuff and like, you know, keeping people on their toes. He's just a different energy, completely different personality, combined with this old school baseball mentality that I think is going to appeal to a lot of people as well. And yet, you know, open-minded too. He's not somebody who's, you know, he's not a meathead baseball coach. He's merging a lot of things together. And I do think the continuity they were given, not just with him, but the entire coaching staff came back. You know, Craig Counsell, when he left, I thought, well, Pat Murphy will follow him to Chicago. That's the natural thing.
Right.
It's not what happened. Everybody stayed. Everybody came back. So that continuity, I think, has also contributed to what the Brewers have cooking right now, which is a pretty connected clubhouse. Winning does that. You know, winning will always bring people together. But I do think, you know, especially with where they were developmentally, they couldn't. I don't know if they could really afford to completely miss a step, you know, just cycle in all new coaches. They chose to stick with what was working. And so far, it's working here on Memorial Day.
It's wonderful to witness. We got Robert from McFarland said he's a bit more open than Craig and he loves Pat Murphy's interviews. Same here. Pat Murphy's having a blast because this is probably going to he retires after this most likely.
Mm-hmm. And yeah, I think so.
And his openness and all the things you're talking about, JR, the Brewers aren't suffering because of it.
Well, and
it seems like they're flourishing.
And if he's going to retire, that's got to free him up a little bit too, to be a little looser, right?
Yeah, presumably there's, and I don't know, you know, maybe he does end up managing somewhere else. He does have freedom. You know, everyone loves Pat Murphy by default because he's not Craig Counsell already. And then they're getting to know his
and they're winning
too. I mean, the cachet is kind of all, you know, the cachet is pretty big for him right now, I would say.
We are going to continue talking baseball with J.R. Radcliffe from the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel. If you have a question or a comment, 855-752-4842. Stay close. You're listening to Matt Nair on air. This is the Civic Media Radio Network. Good morning and welcome back to Matt Nair on Air. Jane Matt Nair, Greg Bach, Dr. Slide on the board, coming to you from our studio in downtown Waukesha. We are joined, instead of on Thursday, he's joining us a day early, Milwaukee Journal Sentinel sports guru J.R. Radcliffe is here talking all things sports balls. We were talking, J.R., when you first joined us at the top of the show. The intro music for the show is Jane Says from Jane's Addiction. And thank you, Andrew in Maine, for doing the homework. Sunday, September 22nd, 6:30 p.m. start time for Jane's Addiction and Love and Rockets at the BMO Harris Pavilion. Starting the show early for us older folks.
A Sunday show.
With Jane Matinier in the front row. Yeah, we'd love to see it.
Absolutely. That would be great. All right, let's talk bad umpires. Bad umpire. Angel Hernandez, who is he? Why is he so widely disliked? Because
we like him now.
He was all over my Twitter feed over the weekend, and people were delighted.
So I don't know if I can pinpoint precisely why Angel Hernandez seems to be this high profile. He's a big league manager for 30 years. He is, by all accounts, just not good at it. You know, like,
wait, manager or umpire?
Sorry, did I say manager?
You said manager.
No. He's been a big league umpire for 30 years.
Okay, all right.
And he's quite bad. his ball and strike zone is... You know, I described it earlier this year on our Brewers podcast. It's like there's kind of an element of unpredictability when he's behind home plate. Like you experience the game differently. There's no pitch that's definitely a strike or a ball. Yeah. It's always a little bit of an adventure. I think it's probably overstated to some degree how bad he is. But at some point in the not too distant past, it became a focal point. Like he was the guy that was the worst of MLB umpires by reputation. Whether or not that was true, that was certainly, it wasn't just fans. It was players who'd called him out. CC Sabathia kind of famously in 2018 after the Yankees were eliminated by the Red Sox, just point blank said, Angel Hernandez is terrible. I don't know why he gets to umpire playoff games. He's terrible in the field, terrible at first base, terrible at the on the plate. There have been a lot of examples over the years of weirdness. He calls balks that aren't balks, which is already kind of a murky baseball thing. But he's been much maligned for years and years and years. A few years ago, he brought I don't know the terminology, civil rights lawsuit against Major League Baseball, believing they were discriminating against umpires of Latino or people of color, and that was thrown out. But certainly that rankled people as well as that sometimes does when a guy perceivably and just kind of demonstrably just isn't very good. And he retiring in the middle of the year is interesting. I think it, you know, it's he's making it sound like he just decided it was time to spend more time with his family or whatever.
That's always convenient.
I'm suspending my campaign because
it's exactly like that.
Yeah.
And I think people are just kind of ding dong, the witch is dead sort of thing, because he has had all these run-ins over the years with people. He's also a little combative, maybe not more than a lot of umpires, but he will get in your face, even though players tell him he's wrong. Players have just had absolute like crazy explosions. Kyle Schwarber against the Brewers last year is a really good example on Sunday Night Baseball, threw all of his equipment and exploded. Both teams were kind of smirking like, he was bad. He's bad. Now he's gone. So
is it safe to assume, though, that he was uniformly terrible? He at least wasn't only terrible to some teams. He was pretty terrible all across the board.
That's correct. Yes. In fact, in looking at Brewers examples, I would say that half of them favored the Brewers. It's just like, what is he doing here? What is he calling? Mm. That Schwarber example, Josh Hader threw a pitch that was clearly ball four. It was called strike three. You could see Hader turn around off the mound and go, you know, that little grimace face emoji, like, did I get away with one there? Everyone knew.
So whose authority is it? Why did they let him coast in this for so long if it was such blatant incompetence? Yeah.
Well, the umpires union is very strong. And that is something that's often pointed to. And I think there's also a big part of this is just the lack of transparency from the umpires union in Major League Baseball. They don't discuss these sorts of personnel things. So ultimately, there's no grading system except our eyes and some of the grading systems that have been developed over the years to try to quantify if an umpire is good or not. But for the most part, we don't know what they're thinking. And MLB will sort of broadly defend anybody, Angel Hernandez or otherwise, with like, well, they get such a high percentage of calls correct that you would be surprised at how accurate he is. I still think there was a pretty big gap between him and many others in his profession. I don't know if it was because the union was that strong or if MLB just really believed in him. I mean, 30 years is 30 years. You don't do something for 30 years without having some acumen, some ability, some personality. By most accounts, he's a really nice guy. So I think that probably plays into it to some degree. But I think that was frustrating for people. Like, there are people who thought he should have been gone years ago. And here he still is. And it's always an adventure. Every night with Angel Hernandez is an adventure.
And here I thought that it was only politicians who consistently suck at their jobs and continue to get reelected. But no, it exists in other things, too. I guess that's comforting. That's
exactly true. Not so much with athletes. You know, they're out by their 30s.
Yeah.
But umpires can hang around for decades.
What kind of a salary does someone like that pull after 30 years, JR?
You know, that is a good question. And one I do not know the answer to. And I think that's kind of unclear as well in public sector. I should just Google. But I don't know. I'm thinking it's probably six figures for a year.
Really?
I imagine. And then probably get bonuses.
Six figures. Actually, I was thinking maybe even seven. I think it's probably six.
I'm sure. And you also probably get bonuses for playoff games and World Series. Mm-hmm. Oh, an MLB umpire salary can range between $120,000 to over $300,000 annually.
That's actually lower than I would think.
The compensation reflects extensive experience, the high level of skill required, and the intense pressure they face in each game.
Still not a bad gig.
I take it. And there's an opening, so I'll apply. I'm just as good as Angel Hernandez.
Because anyone can just show up and throw their hat in the ring and have the chance to be a major league.
They do have a minor league system. Guys work in the minors before the majors. I mean, these guys are groomed for a long time, and there aren't a lot of openings. There are some every year, but not a lot. So it is a hard business to crack into.
J.R. Radcliffe is here. He's the sports guru for the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel. Normally joins us on Thursday. We did a little switching around today. I don't know if you had a chance to see this, J.R., and we didn't talk about this before you joined us, but Scotty Scheffler, it looks like, is going to be, the Chargers are going to be dropped, the golfer.
Scot-free, you might say.
Oh, look at that.
Oh, my goodness.
That definitely seemed like where we were headed, you know, with the limited footage that was available, and it just... what a bizarre story. I mean, Louisville PD has some explaining to do, you know, and it feels like they didn't realize, even though they were in charge of this golf event, did not even realize that they could be dealing with that level of celebrity and didn't know who the guys were, which I don't know if that's necessarily their job, but it feels like they walked into something there a little bit unnecessarily. And I don't know, you know, like, I feel like I'm rooting for the St. Louis Cardinals. You know, do I root for the big rich golfer or the police department? Yeah. Like, I don't really care how this shakes out.
Yeah, but, JR, do what I do. Just don't care. It's great. It's golf.
No, it is golf.
Ugh.
Okay.
It is golf. He is so highly regarded, though, Scottie Scheffler. Is like, yeah. Well, it could not have happened to a crazier athlete. I mean, he's thought of as like the purest human being in PGA golf. And it's him who gets arrested. And then there's camera footage that's like, what did he do? So just a wild situation.
J.R. Ratcliffe joins us every other week, actually, to talk all things sports balls. Thank you so much for joining us, J.R. Have fun at the ballpark tomorrow.
Absolutely, I will, guys. See you soon.
Stay with us. News is coming up next, and then public service announcement with Dr. Laura Hanks. You're listening to Matt Nair on Air, coming to you across the vast Civic Media Radio Network.
The following content is not intended as medical advice. Always consult your own physician, pharmacist, or healthcare professional for your own healthcare concerns.
Good morning and welcome back to Matt Nair on Air. Jane Matt Nair, Greg Mock, Sweet Gal B on the board, coming to you from our studio in downtown Waukesha. You can always join us. Call or text at 855-752-4842. Leave a comment on the live stream on Facebook, YouTube, and what used to be Twitter. You can always shoot us an email if you would have a topic you would like Dr. Laura Hanks to address. Doesn't have to be OBGYN related. You can send it to Jane Says, JaneSays, Jane Says at civicmedia, all one word, .us. Of course, all your complaint emails, send to Calvin. Good luck. Dr. Laura Hanks joins us every Wednesday at this time for a public service announcement. We weren't sure you were going to actually be able to join the show today because you do actually do doctor things.
Believe it or not, every now and then I get to deliver a baby, which is pretty cool.
And as someone on the live stream mentioned, this is you're out of the house.
Out of the house.
They let you out of the house.
I do have an update, though. Now we're dealing with double ear infections.
So just to recap, for people who might have missed.
2 weeks ago.
2 weeks ago, you came down with pink eye. One of your kids came down with lice. Mm-hmm. Last week, one of your kids came down with hand, foot, and mouth disease. And now we have double ear infections.
You got it. You're like a pediatrician textbook.
And you're like a pediatrician petri dish is what you guys are.
What will happen next is they will become immune from everything, and you will be the mother to two X-Men, and they shall fight crime.
Seriously, they're getting everything out of the way real early on. Hopefully, you'll burn through. Good heavens.
Yeah, I hope so too.
What? How do you, just out of curiosity, how do you treat an ear infection like that?
I could tell you.
Antibiotics.
Yep. Amoxicillin. Yeah.
Is that what it is?
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. There's three. I remember this from med school. Now I'm at a blank on it, but there's like three main bugs that usually cause ear infections. And there isn't a lot of antibiotic resistance yet to those. So, this kiddo has just had a ton of them. So I think the next step for him is tubes.
Tubes. That was. When I was little, I used to get between 1 and 3 ear infections a year.
Really?
Mm-hmm. Varying degrees of like infection. And I would always be on, amoxicillin, basically amoxicillin cocktails. I was just drinking the stuff.
Right.
And I never got tubes, which was so weird. And then the last time I ever got an ear infection to the degree, which I used to as a child, I remember he said, all right, we're going to get you some amoxicillin. I'm like, yeah, the pink stuff. It's a pink liquid that tastes like bubble gum. So, you know, you don't want it, but it's tasty. And he's like, all right, you're just going to take these and take two with dinner or whatever. And I'm like, wait a minute. Whoa. What is this pill thing? I want my pink juice.
No more pink juice for you.
Never got an ear infection after that either.
So you delivered a baby this morning, and you delivered it by C-section. And I don't have kids. I am curious, under what conditions does a woman usually get a C-section? Do you perform a C-section?
Yeah, good question. So about a third of all deliveries in the U.S. right now are via a C-section. And we, believe it or not, we really try to avoid doing C-sections because a vaginal delivery is generally a safer and less invasive approach. But times that we do recommend C-section are if the baby is breech, if there's something called a placenta previa, where the placenta is lying over the cervix, so there's kind of blocking the way out for the baby. If they've had prior surgeries on their uterus, like a classical incision, which is an up and down incision, we worry about if they labor, having uterine rupture, things like that. And then, you know, we do believe in autonomy. So patients, we can give them all the risk and benefits of a C-section versus a vaginal delivery. And every now and again, patients will choose that they'd rather have a C-section. That's pretty rare. But some people have history of trauma, either from vaginal delivery or from sexual trauma, things like that, and just don't feel like they could go through with a vaginal birth. And so as long as they are appropriately counseled, that is an option that they can choose.
And the important thing there is options.
Mm-hmm.
The important thing there is options.
Choice.
I saw this as we weren't sure, quite sure whether or not you were going to be able to join us. And then when I found it, you were performing a C-section this morning. They just posted this today on CNN. It says Florida allows doctors to perform C-sections outside of hospitals. From Phil Galowitz.
Of course, it's in Florida.
Right? That's where all the wacky stuff seems to start.
Always, yeah.
Florida is now the first state allowing doctors to perform C-sections outside of hospitals, siding with a private equity-owned physicians group that says the change will lower costs and give pregnant women the homier birthing atmosphere that many desire.
Yeah. So I have several thoughts.
Okay, because I do too.
I have no thoughts. No thoughts on this.
So first and foremost, you know, I just kind of talked through reasons that people can either be advised to have a C-section or might choose to have a C-section. And I kind of glossed over the counseling of the risky aspects. So when I talk to a patient about you're having a surgery, it's in a major abdominal surgery. Yes, we do it a lot, but it's still, we're making a big incision on your abdomen. So there's risk of bleeding. There's risk of injury around where we're working, like bowel and bladder. And that could have long-term consequences. And when I talk about bleeding, when we talk about bleeding in OBGYN, it's a lot more bleeding than really anywhere else in medicine. So at the time of term, when a full-term baby is inside the uterus, the uterus is getting a half a liter of blood a minute.
Wow.
So these blood vessels are very dilated. So like imagine a liter of cola. In 2 minutes, you could have that much blood on the floor if you don't have control of your bleeding. Okay. So like these are, yes, we do them all the time, but they are like major procedures that we need to be prepared for major amount of blood loss, which is why they are done in a hospital. Keyword hospital.
Yeah.
So that's like my first real problem with this situation. The other thing is that it's confusing to patients when they hear, you know, that they can get a C-section. I think some patients will assume that it is a hospital or that they have the resources to deal with major hemorrhages or complications. The article talks about, oh, well, we'll take low-risk patients. The thing with our patients is a lot of them are young and healthy, and so they look good until they don't, and they can collapse very quickly, and it can be very scary, especially with the amount of blood loss I'm talking about. That can happen real quick, and you got to be ready for that. You need to have blood around. You need to be able to have medications to stop it. And you need to have someone that knows what to do when that happens. It kind of reminded me in this kind of like confusion of like the crisis pregnancy center situation, yeah. like where patients, you know, go to when they are early in pregnancy and they're not sure where to go. And they look up these crisis pregnancy centers and they go there and get bad information.
Yep.
You know, even if, regardless if they want to have a termination or continue. So it kind of reminded me of that, just like with confusion that patients might experience when they see these kind of things.
Yeah. This, again, I have no medical background, but this seems like a very questionable decision. The hospital yeah. industry and nation's leading OBGYNs association says that even though some Florida hospitals have closed their maternity wards in recent years, doing C-sections in doctor-run clinics increase the risks for women and babies, as you said, Dr. Hanks, when there are complications.
Mm-hmm. And it's not only that, and what was very interesting that was kind of hidden in all this is the insurance aspect of it. And I think that like the what they're trying to do is a bad idea for like something that needs a solution. So we need care for yeah. pregnant patients,
yes.
right? But Medicaid reimbursement is the lowest for any sort of medical procedures for L&D. So that's why a lot of these centers, L&D centers, labor and delivery centers are closing, because the Medicaid reimbursement is so low and our malpractice is higher than anyone else's.
Oh,
okay, because we have two patients,
sure,
right?
Sure.
And it's high risk, it's high stakes. So they're looking at this problem that there's, you know, and since 2019 in Florida, they've had 17 hospitals closed. So they're trying to find a solution, but this is not the right solution.
I mean, just by what you're saying, and I mean, I guess because I didn't think about it ever, but there's really, is there no such thing as a low risk pregnancy or a low risk patient who is pregnant? Because at any point, as you're saying, something can just go wrong. So it has to be protected and they have to be in a room full of the people and services.
And potential services they're going to need.
Yeah. Personally, I don't think so, but I'm, you know, jaded because yeah. I've seen things go wrong. But, you know, interestingly, people have lots of opinions about home births, home vaginal births mm-hmm. and things like that. I don't offer that. I wasn't trained that way. But there was an interesting article that came out of England. So when I was a med student, so it was like 10 years ago now, or more. Ugh. anyway, it talked about how it's a home birth can be a reasonable option for low risk patients. Again, when they're appropriately counseled, when they are close to a hospital. So if things do go sideways, that they know when and how to get to the hospital and, you know, they're with someone that can say, this isn't going well, you now need to transfer to a hospital. So in that situation, again, that's not talking about C-section, this is totally different, right? But it is an interesting discussion, but I personally would never feel comfortable because I've seen a lot of things go wrong when, you know, in perfectly healthy, normal patients and deliveries.
Talking about this article in CNN that just dropped this morning, Florida allows doctors to perform C-sections outside of hospitals. An assistant professor of OBGYN at the University of Pennsylvania School of Medicine says, this looks like a poor substitute for quality obstetrical care, effectively being billed as something that gives people more choices. This is a bad Band-Aid on a chronic issue that is going to make outcomes worse than better. And this probably is not unusual, Dr. Hanks, but I am so uncomfortable by private equity groups owning doctors' groups. Yeah. Those two things are completely cross purposes.
Yeah. Yeah, I find the whole setup, like I said, and I think that person worded it better than I just did, that it's an attempt to fix a problem that needs to be fixed. And that's kind of how they're portraying it, is, oh, we're doing this good thing. And it's like, this is not the right way to do it. The right way to do it is to get better Medicaid reimbursement.
Yes.
To figure out something with our malpractice so that we can keep safe labor and delivery services open to patients where we have the resources available. And that's, you know, going to be done through hospitals, not small private equity groups that, you know, I think it said it somewhere in there, like, oh, well, yeah, I mean, money is something we've thought about.
Just a little. It's just a little part of the equation, Dr. Hanks. Yeah. We're not money motivated at all.
Did you look, the guy that is kind of spearheading this is 68. He's retired and he's 68 years old and he's a he. No offense, Greg. Well, but come on.
Hey,
we've been ruining things for a long time. I'm used to it. It's
men know best about women's bodies, Dr. Hanks. We know that now.
Yeah. Obviously.
Yeah. I'm just going to.
My small brain can't comprehend.
Yeah, I know, right?
Well, I mean, we have a vet who is in Madison right now who knows more about pregnancies than any one of you. He's delivered more animals.
Yes.
And he understands how the female human body works because animal birth, right? Am I right, people? High five, guys. High five, guys.
Exactly. Exactly. So I don't know. Maybe it's Widgeons, right?
What was that?
Wasn't it his name?
Kitchens. Joel Kitchens. I'll forget the names of some of my family members someday. I'll never forget Representative Joel Kitchens.
If you have a question for Dr. Hanks, you can call. You can text at 855-752-4842. Stay close. One more segment to go. You're listening to Matt Nair on Air. This is the Civic Media Radio Network. Welcome back to Matt Nair on Air. Jane Matt Nair, Greg Bach, RYPC, Young Person Calvin on the board.
Resident
Young Person Calvin on the board, I know. Coming to you live from our studio in downtown Waukesha, where you can always join us at 855-75-CIVIC or leave a comment on the live stream on Facebook, YouTube, and what used to be Twitter. She joins us every Wednesday at this time at 11:33 for public cervix announcements. And Dr. Hanks, we have a question or just a comment from Andrew on the live stream. You were talking about, have you been in practice for a little more than a decade? So Dr. Hanks was a medical student at 15.
Oh, is he saying I'm young?
He's saying you are young. Yes. Oh,
you knew Doogie Howser.
Thank you for that, Andrew. You racked up some points. We were talking about an article that dropped on CNN this morning about Florida allowing doctors to perform C-sections outside of hospitals at private equity doctors groups that admit that, oh yeah, we're making money, but it's not really about the money because hospitals make money too. Yeah, but I still feel like any private equity is all about making money.
Yeah.
Isn't that their reason for existence?
That's my understanding, but I didn't go to business school, so probably should have, but I also went into the wrong profession.
Right?
Should have been an orthopedic surgeon.
There's still time. You're only like 22. You got
who doesn't love
go back to medical school and go ahead.
Who doesn't love feet?
Robert from McFarland has a question. Is it true most cesareans happen between 9 a.m. and 5 p.m.? And can you have a vaginal delivery after a C-section?
The way you went like this, I know what you're saying.
A great question. I know exactly what he's talking
about. Okay, good.
So there was this, it's kind of a school of thought. I don't know. I'm so young that I don't remember back when. In the olden days.
Watch it, doctor.
Back in the 80s, 70s, there was a thought that OBGYNs wanted to get home for dinner. And so if they couldn't get, you know, if the mom was pushing or if they weren't quite dilated and they needed, you know, to get home to their family, they would just say, well, you need a C-section or you need a forceps delivery because they needed to go home. That is not the case anymore. Oh my God. At least everywhere I've practiced, you know, so we, you know, practice evidence-based medicine, and we have someone on call 24 hours a day. We have someone, you know, in the hospital around to do deliveries. Where I work, again, everyone's practice model is going to be a little different, but regardless, the recommendations for C-sections are what I said before, not based on the time of day. So I've done C-sections at 2 in the morning, 3, right. You know, 5 a.m. When I'm walking out the door and someone needs it, then I walk back in and do the C-section. It doesn't...
An emergency is an emergency. It's not like, we're going to wait until tomorrow when I come in at 9. You just hang on overnight and it'll all be good. No, it's an emergency. That's why you're having a C-section.
The little lady's making a roast. Let's make this quick.
And then the other question about having a vaginal birth, I'm glad you asked that too, because we're seeing a lot more of that because we're seeing more C-sections. And we do offer that. Again, it depends on the hospital. Some hospitals might not be comfortable offering a vaginal delivery after someone's had a C-section. And the reason why is, I mentioned before, certain incisions on the uterus can be more risky, but what we do, a low transverse is kind of the general incision we make at term. We still worry about something called a uterine rupture, which is basically where that scar on the uterus can open up and can obviously cause massive bleeding and can compromise the baby as well. So the oxygen nutrients that the baby's getting. So that can obviously be catastrophic. The chance of that happening after one C-section is less than 1%. So we still offer it to patients, but we say it's very important that you deliver in a hospital, because that is a risk that we are aware of, and we keep very close eye on those patients by monitoring the baby's heart rate, monitoring the patient for any increased signs of bleeding or pain. So it is definitely something that can be offered at certain hospitals. Definitely would not offer it at like the kind of place that they're mentioning in Florida, or at like a home birthing place that I don't think is appropriate. That is no longer, you know, a low risk situation. But it is something that can be done.
Talking about an article that dropped on CNN this morning about these birth centers in Florida where women will be allowed to have a C-section instead of in a hospital. There was an acknowledgement that a private equity firm invested in women's care. The birth center idea is about making money, but they say the same profit motive incentives apply to hospitals and midwives. They oppose who likely oppose the idea of centers that can do C-sections because they're going to cut into hospital revenue. They're saying that the hospitals don't want these because you're cutting into your C-section money.
Oh my God.
I have so many frustration. I feel like Greg and I are just like beyond words.
So throughout the history of this segment, as I've been a part of this show, I've listened to you, I've listened to Dr. Lyerly, and I've listened to Dr. Hanks talk about the various times in which men have tried to push their opinion and succeeded onto the bodies of women. And it's a frustrating thing. And listening to you talk about it is frustrating. But and I'm not saying it's less than, but as a man listening to other men talk in this manner, I don't even know what to do with myself. Like, I can't gather us all in a meeting. That would take too much time. But I'm also just like, why are we ever talking? Why are we ever talking?
I think women have been asking that question a long time. Why?
And I said it before, and I'll say it again. Talking? When you can find a sustainable, very low cost way of reproducing, just push us over a cliff like the mammoths, like the woolly mammoths. We're done. We've served our purpose. It wasn't a good one.
Bold statement from Greg Bach this morning.
Oh.
Yeah. Well, you know, it's. I hope that they can find a better option for the women or patients with uteruses in Florida that want to have babies. But I don't think in summary that this is the right answer.
Well, for right now, no other state allows C-sections outside of hospitals, although Florida's tend to be a little training ground or experiment to see what's going to come to the rest of the country. Dr. Laura Hanks has been our guest for Public Service Announcement. Thank you so much for squeezing us in today. I know you're busy doing actual doctor things. We will see you next week. Stay close. News is coming up next. Thank you, Greg and Calvin and all our engineers. Without you, nothing works. And thanks to all of you for calling and texting and most of all listening. It means the world. I hope you find some joy today and you have the chance to share it. News is next on the Civic Media Radio Network.